Blog Talk Radio.
All right, folks, this is Rabble Rouse from Rich Berger, huh?
Hey, Tornado.
And we have a guest on tonight we are familiar with. We've had on in the past a few times. Johnny Bones Shattuck. Not Johnny Bones Jones, but close second. So he's been involved in this Warrior Island show that's been going around, it's a mixed martial arts show. I think that's, I know it's a reality show, but it's all these guys on an island training to be MMA fighters. Not sure if it's like the Ultimate Fighter and they fight each other on the show, but sounds like that's probably the format. We'll get more details from John when we get him on in a few minutes here.
I remember us talking to him before.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. Like sometimes, you know, I forget, you know, what I had for breakfast. But of course, I can remember the exact sequence of punches that won a title fight in
1981. All right.
Wait a second. Hey, Rich, I'm watching the Red Sox and my Phillies right now.
Yeah. Winning. For now.
Yeah. Well, you got to win today to get the split.
All right. I'll see you guys won yesterday. I didn't see the rest of it yesterday. So
yeah. Papelbon, your boy Pap had some trouble in the ninth, but, you know, he saved it. You guys gave him a nasty reception up in Boston the other day, and that was very uncalled for.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Now, a player from your squad, Shane Victorino, he came back to Philly. We gave him a very warm reception. We're very nice people.
Oh, really?
we just got our bad reputation, you know, throwing snowballs at Santa Claus and batteries at people's heads, you know. We get a bad reputation, but we're just sensitive people here.
Well, Papelbon was a big guy for us. He was actually thrilled to be back at Fenway, from what I heard. He was walking in.
Oh, yeah.
Second game.
I actually really did not need to bring him in. I mean, Lee had gone through like 8 innings at the time. He'd only thrown 90 pitches, and he'd mowed down like the last 23 out of the 25 guys he faced. Mowed them right down, had like 9 strikeouts, but they wanted to bring in Papelbon for like the emotional effect. And, you know, I mean, he was blazing. I think he got one. Like, usually he's around like a 93, 94 mile an hour guy. I know up in Boston he was more of like a 98er, but he hit 96, I think.
Nice. Well, yeah, the Red Sox have been pretty good lately. They had an incredible comeback the other day that I watched live, where they scored 3 runs in the bottom of the ninth. And this is one of those things where, you know, the pitcher that was in trouble seemed to almost fake an injury to get out of it. Threw the ball. Hello. Thank you. Yeah, got some technical difficulties. Get Tony back. I guess he hung up. Disconnected. Hey, there he is. Tom,
I'm back.
I'm supposed to be on the line too, but I can't hear him.
Oh.
Technical difficulties.
I got a question for you.
Yes.
What was my most proud professional accomplishment? I got to fill out an online work survey.
Professional accomplishment.
Interviewing
Roy Jones Jr.
That was a pretty good one. It was a good interview. I enjoyed that. And I was successfully able to talk about his amateur and Olympic career.
Right.
And I was able to focus the blame on him for ruining the Olympic scoring system for 2 decades. Well, that's what I said.
Or you could go with your professional fandom on your TV spots.
Yeah.
Be a professional fan. Well, I mean, I don't know what's going on with this computer, but it's going wicked slow tonight.
Computer, that's what it always does.
Yeah. Yeah, right before I get ready to do the show, I'm saying, all right, well, I'm not connected to Skype now. I'll just wait a couple minutes. If it connects, then we'll go from there. So it connected, and then I'm trying to make the call, and the call won't go through. So I said, all right, well, I'm going to reset it anyway. And I reset it, and just when I'm getting ready to do the call, then I get the blue screen virus popping up. I got to shut it off right away before that takes effect. And shut up, turn it back on, and now it's jammed up again, but no blue screen yet.
Not the blue screen of death.
Nope. But anyway, we do have John Shattuck on a little bit later. We got a lot to talk about. We got boxing, a lot of boxing coming up. Not necessarily coming up, but we had the big Carl Froch versus Mikhail Kessler fight, and Kessler lost this time.
Yeah. If you remember what I was talking about last week, I was saying, you know, I think, Frank is playing the hot hand right now, and I think that's what's going to lead him to victory, and it did, you know. I mean, Kessler, he fought tough, but Frank, was just that much better at his physique. But I still think Frotch has a style that's pretty much made to order for a guy like Andre Ward, who beat him the first time, I thought much more convincingly than the judges had it. And I think Frotch, they were talking about maybe a catchweight fight with him and Bernard Hopkins. And I think Frotch's style plays right into Hopkins' hand. Hopkins is a guy that's going to struggle with some Chad Dawson's, you know, a slick southpaw boxer that doesn't like to engage. A guy like Jermaine Taylor, you know, a guy that's a consistent jabber that likes to play it safe. Guys like that are going to trouble Hopkins. But when you get him out there against guys that are flat-footed, straightforward, very aggressive, he needs to take that apart. Look what he did to Tavares Clough. You know, this is a year after losing convincingly to Chad Dawson. He goes out there and takes care of the school. Same thing when he did to John Pascal. Same thing when he did 12 years ago to Tito Trinidad and Teddy Pavlik. And he was just 34 years old when he did that to Pavlik. So I think you get him in there with the call of crunch. I think Hopkins, you know, plays in session.
Could be. Well, I know that I guess Frotch pissed at least one person off when he said after the fight that he compared himself. Actually, he said that he was the second best British boxer ever, and he really pissed off Joe Calzaghe's father saying that.
And Enzo. Enzo is a moderate guy.
Yeah. He put himself...
From Wales, born and raised in Wales, but Joe Calzaghe is an Italian kid, and Enzo, very much you can tell is like an old school Italian guy, a lot of fire in his stomach, kind of reminds me of Lou Duva a little bit, and I can almost see that baiting Joe out of retirement, just by him saying something like that. And once again, I don't know how much Joe has left. I mean, he retired, what was it, like 2-3 years ago at least. I remember his fight in 2009 with Roy Jones, and I predicted that fight. I still have my report picking Calzaghe to win by decision, and people were saying that I was an idiot, and he did. And, he's looking impressive. He's still undefeated. He's got real quick hands. Sometimes he slaps a lot. And sometimes if a fighter doesn't try to engage with him, he can have a fight that can kind of stink. I remember one fight he had on Showtime was dreadful. But overall, he's been impressive. And I know Savanaki ducked him like a son of a bitch back when they were both champions. And I think if Calzaghe, I don't know how much he has left or if he even wants to fight anymore, but I think he has a style to frustrate Frock just like he did Kessler a couple of years ago. He took Kessler to school.
Yeah, that's one of the things that's mentioned in this article.
Let me add to that. He took a prime Kessler to school.
Yeah, so putting himself up there as number two in the world, when you got a guy who retired undefeated. Well, number two, it's in the UK anyway.
Right.
I guess that's not too bright on his part to compare himself above.
Well, the guy, he can be abrasive sometimes, but, let's be honest.
All right. Well, we got some other news too. Plenty of boxing MMA to cover. Let's see, we got a story here about Paul Daly. He is speaking of the UK. He's over in the UK, and he's kind of stuck there. He's got some kind of legal problem that is preventing him from traveling to the United States. He's under contract with Bellator, and he was supposed to be part of the last welterweight tournament, but he couldn't get into the United States. So now, since he can't get a travel visa, he's trying to stay busy with fights outside of Bellator, and it's one of those leagues where you can fight for other promotions. But apparently they have to approve of the opponent. So... Daly's Facebook ranting about the fact that I guess Bellator is refusing all of his proposed opponents. He says, "I've got great fights offered to keep me busy fighting and earning, and they seem to want to put a stop to this. All this while having to pay for my own legal costs on a matter that influences my visa outcome and my ability to fight for Bellator. It's BS." But Daly also confirmed the information later in a message to Bleacher Report, with no resolution in sight to allow him to compete on an upcoming card. And I guess he was offered a fight on an upcoming Cage Warriors show in Ireland, but there's no agreement on an opponent. And the promotion offered names like UFC welterweight Shea Mills, Cage Warriors welterweight champion Cat Hall Pendred, Bruno Carvalho, and Benjamin Brinza, all of whom were denied by Bellator. Interestingly enough. So, a few weeks ago, Bjorn Rebney talked about the Daly situation, but sounded unclear if or when Daly would be able to compete for the promotion again. And he says he's emailed Daly about once a week. Also, there's a booking fee involved, apparently. Other promoters have to pay Bellator a booking fee just for using him on the show. So if you thought the UFC was overprotective of their guys, I guess Bellator can be just as bad in some senses. And we'll get into the salaries of fighters a little bit later. The fighters on the UFC, they just released a big salary list of all those guys. I'm having a big problem trying to connect her to the talk radio interface to get Tom on. You still there, Tony?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay. Got you. All right. Well, we're going to try to connect John Shattuck any minute here. Nothing's working. Of course, we had a big UFC. We'll talk with Tom once we finally get him connected a little bit later about that one. It was a pretty big heavyweight show like we talked about a little bit last week before he got cut off from the end of the show there. We just barely, I think, scraped the surface of the preview before we got booted. Mike Tyson was there, though. Mike Tyson played a big role, actually. Guys were climbing over the fence just to shake his hand after their fights. And at one point, apparently he changed the opinion of the UFC brass there in deciding on who was going to get the fight of the night bonus, or knockout of the night, I believe. They wanted to give it to the main event guys, Junior Dos Santos, wasn't the main event, but Junior Dos Santos knocked out Mark Hunt with a kick and punch combinations, basically. And they ended up giving it to TJ Grant, who knocked out Gray Maynard. So he overruled the UFC giving out the bonus. Yeah. He's a big idol to some of these guys that came up in MMA. They really like to watch his fight still to this day. And he's, I guess he's Dana White's new best friend. Hanging out a lot. And like our guest not too long ago, Glenn Johnson, apparently Tyson wants to do more commentary types. We'll see if that.
I always got to say, I think Tyson would be a very good commentator for boxing, just because he knows so much about the sport. You got a guy that, when he was starting with Customato, and then even after D'Amato passed away, he always had just a tremendous library of, old school fighters. And he would just talk about how we would watch some of the great fighters in the past. And not just all sluggers either. You were talking about the guys like the Joe Moses, the Sugar Ray Robinsons, the Charlie Burleys, Rocky Marciano. He was just, and his library of just, fight tapes was legendary. He would be a guy as a commentator, I think, would help ratings so much. The only problem is you'd have to make sure that you had a short leash on him, because you never know if he goes into one of his rants, and obviously you don't want him doing anything profane on there, like sounding like a guy with Tourette syndrome, because sometimes Mike would get on those rants. That would be the biggest concern, but for boxing or MMA, he would bring in people to watch, because just like when he was a fighter, he attracted a crowd. And I think he'd be the same as a commentator.
Probably, definitely. Oh, we're going to connect John Shattuck.
The last people to hang over was no Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
Shattuck Ricks Martial Arts.
Hey, John, how's it going?
Hey, how's it going?
This is Rabble Rousing Rich Pergeron. We're also on the line with Tony the Tornado Pennacal.
Okay, great.
So what you been up to? It's been a while.
I'm in the process of working on getting on the show Warrior Island, which is a MMA-based reality show. It's actually more of a martial arts reality show, but I guess MMA. And it's going to take 16 fighters. We're going to put them, I'll be going to an island, I believe, which would be Hawaii, and fight out to winner take all.
Cool.
Nice.
Now, what is the format of this show? Do they actually have you fight other guys on the show, or is it training? Or what's the whole
thing? Well, I guess it's a little bit of everything. They kind of keep us a little bit in the dark on it, but it's going to have Henzo Gracie, Helson Gracie, Dan Severn, Ron Van Cleef, amongst other martial arts masters are going to be there to train the fighters. We're going to train train with them and then eventually be fighting. I believe it's going to have some, like, team contests and stuff, similar to, like, a Survivor type thing. And we'll also be fighting. But, again, you know, they're kind of keeping us in the dark for the show.
Cool. We also have Psychic Tom Padgett joining us. How's it going, Tom?
I'm on, finally.
There he is. All
right.
So, John, what have you been doing to get ready for the show?
We got our guys getting ready for grappling. We've been doing a lot of grappling lately, but sparring. I've sparred some pro boxers. I've been working with a Pan Am champion grappler that I'm rolling with. So I'm rolling with some high-level guys and boxing with some high-level guys and striking and just trying to keep in shape. But being 45, I got to kind of pace myself a little bit differently than the younger guys. So I'm doing a lot of mental stuff, preparation with my older brother, Chris. So there's a lot of different stuff involved.
Cool. And for all those folks listening who didn't hear any past interviews we did with you, how did you first get into fighting?
Well, I started wrestling at age 3. I have 3 older brothers, and instead of going away for summer vacations, we would travel up and down the East Coast and wrestle in tournaments. We actually took 3rd place as a team, me and my brother, so it was pretty funny. I got into that, then I got into high school. I was burnt out of wrestling by the time I got into high school and got into Golden Gloves boxing and quit basically wrestling cold turkey into Golden Gloves boxing for about 8 years. And then I did that. Within a stint of that, I did shorinryu karate and I did some kickboxing. And then got out of that and then got into Aikido. I did that for a couple of years. And then started to get into jiu-jitsu. So. And here I am. I got a little bit of everything in there. So.
All right. So MMA is kind of a little bit new to you, right?
I'm sorry?
And is MMA a little bit new to you at this point, but getting into it?
Yeah, I have never fought an MMA fight, but I've done everything. I've competed in kickboxing, I've competed in boxing, I've competed in wrestling, I've competed in jiu-jitsu. So I've done everything separately. I just haven't done it all wrapped up into one ball. But I mean, I do train. We have fighters here that I train, so I spar and I do all the different stuff with them. So I've always been training it. I just haven't done the actual competition in the cage, you know, one-on-one with somebody, but I've, you know, trained and rolled with other people and stuff.
Cool. And what do you love most about fighting in general?
It's competition. It's one-on-one. I've played team sports. Problem with team sports is you could put 100% out there and, you know, and you can lose because somebody else on the team maybe hasn't given all their all, or vice versa. I mean, you're responsible is the beauty of it. So, you know, if you lose, it's kind of your fault, and if you win, it's all because of what you did. So.
Okay. All right. And do you know what network the show is going to be on? Have they decided that yet? Or?
I know it's going to be on a lot of dish channels. One of them that I can think of is Punch TV, Comcast Sportsnet in Chicago, and a variety of other channels. I'd be lying if I could tell you what they are. But it's going to be, they're projecting it to be in 100 million households. So it's going to be a lot of channels. So, Dish and the DirecTV are going to be the main holders, but, you know, some of the Comcast people will be able to get us and stuff. So we'll be on a variety of different channels.
Cool. And how about other guys on the show? Do you have any idea who the other contestants are at this point?
Yeah. One of them, Neil Grove, has fought in Bellator before. He's fought some high-level guys. He's from South Africa. I believe he is the European champion. I might be incorrect. I know he's got a title, but he's very good. He's actually kind of close to my age. I think he's about 42 or 43. But he's a big guy. He's huge. He's like 6'6", like 260. And James McSweeney was supposed to be on the show. But he is not. He's doing, I think he's signed with another organization, I believe. Let's see. Jeff Lentz is going to be, who was in the Ultimate Fighter show, is going to be on season 2. Trying to think of high name guys. But there's a lot of quality fighters. I mean, they got, you know, guys that have fought in Bellator and some of the other organizations, so. It's going to be interesting. There's going to be a lot of guys in different styles. Styles may fight. So they also have martial. I mean, the thing is it's a martial arts thing. And one of the things that they want to do that's going to be a little bit different is we'll be training in gis for the jiu-jitsu with the Gracies. We'll be training kung fu with Master Ram Van Cleef. So, I would be training Kung Fu with Master Chow. So there's different instructors that will be teaching. It's not just going to be about MMA. It's going to be about being a martial artist.
Cool. So
Do
you would they be putting you into competitions in those different disciplines rather than MMA in general, do you think?
I'm sorry?
Are they going to be putting you into competition in the different disciplines rather than MMA in general?
No, we'll be fighting. The fights will be MMA, but we're kind of kept in the dark on a lot of stuff. So, you know, I can only imagine, you know, they may be doing different competitions up to that point. So they may be doing some different stuff to win prizes and stuff as well. But when you fight, it's going to be mixed martial arts. One of the things that they've talked about doing is actually not fighting in a cage, but in different types of different arenas and different, you know, stuff outside, kind of like Mortal Kombat type of thing. So.
Right. All right. Anybody else got any questions?
Well, I was going to ask, now, aside from talking to us, of course, what other venues are you, you know, trying to do promotions to, you know, this out there to get this known? You know, obviously we want to get, you know, you want to get the ratings up as, you know, as high as possible. And just how are you planning to do that?
I'm helping out a little bit, but I'm one of the fighters on the show, so. What they're doing is they're doing, they're doing some radio stuff. The gentleman that's the CEO of Global Proving Ground, which is actually the fighting organization that's putting it on, has actually been on the show Shark Tank. So, that should get them some good, publicity and some press as well. They're actually going to be fighting in Brazil this weekend. So there's some guys fighting in Brazil, so that should be get them some good advertising. If you check them out on Facebook, You know, they're all over the place. James Jefferson is the CEO of Global Proving Ground, so if you check out, go on his page or go on the Global Proving Ground page, it will tell you more about it. But they're all over the internet, you know, Facebook, Twitter. But yeah, I mean, I basically have done quite a bit of radio shows lately, and I actually got one coming up this Sunday, so I'm trying to get the word out as well. For me personally, I'm looking to get some sponsorship to help you know, raise training capital and stuff for the show. So anybody who wants their logo on my shorts and stuff can contact me directly, and that would help me out.
So it's kind of like a regular fight. They actually allow you to have sponsorships during the show and everything?
Well, yeah, it's going to be kind of, it's done through the show, but we get, a kickback on it, what you can say. So you can advertise for space on the show. You do commercials and whatnot. Or if you have a product that, you know, they'll be able to use on the show, they can do that as well. So we've got some interesting sponsors. I know bodybuilding.com is one of them. And we're just trying to get more as well to keep the show alive. They're already doing tryouts for season two, so the people that couldn't make season one, you still have an opportunity to try out for season two. You just submit your video to Global Proving Ground, and you can get on for season two.
Awesome. And you're locked for season one, right?
Yeah, season one's locked out, so I am on. It's a matter of the dates moved back a couple times, so I'm not positive. I think they're shooting for the fall now. Hopefully get us out there. So.
Cool. And tell us a little bit about your training center there. I know you've been doing a lot with that, right?
Yeah, we got I've got a small center, but we got some decent fighters out of here. We're, like I said, right now we're focusing. We have a grappling tournament, the Maryland Open, which is kind of a big tournament. We got some guys training for that. We just had a kid who just won the lightweight title at Stellar Fights, and he fought Eddie Alvarez's little brother Albert. So that was kind of a big deal. We're pretty excited about him. His name's Tucker Lutz. And I've got a few other fighters that are up and coming, so we got some good fighters in the mix that are coming up. So
that's pretty funny. Somebody with the last name Alvarez would name their kid Albert. That's a weird one. And where is the gym?
We're in Sykesville, Maryland. We're about an hour northwest of Baltimore, so. But we're kind of hidden in the back a little bit, but we're starting to make some noise, so people are starting to kind of trickle in a little bit.
Cool. And what's the scene like as far as MMA and just fighting in general in that area?
Maryland is kind of hard right now. They're actually supposed to be hopefully changing the rules pretty soon. The rules are almost a little bit too tame. You know, shin guards, no kicks to the head, no ground and pound, which really kind of takes it out of some of the fights. So my guys won't fight in Maryland until they change the rules. And I've been talking to the commissioner. I'm hoping they do change it soon. We fight right now mainly in Delaware out of Stellar Fights. We've got to get pretty good rapport with that organization. But we have been known to fight in Virginia and PA as well. So it kind of sucks right now to travel in well over an hour to each one of these locations to fight, sometimes 2 hours. And it'd be nice to get something local.
Right. All right. And as you've been picking up MMA, do you have a favorite submission or anything like that, or a style that you like?
It's kind of weird because you know, boxing is probably what I'm best at because it's been such a long time since I really competed as a wrestler. But I'm big into jiu-jitsu because it's kind of new to me. So I just started back training with the gi. It was recommended to me, and I have a friend that just started teaching gi at my studio. We were doing no-gi for the last, like, about 4 years. So I've just started doing that. So I guess the jiu-jitsu is more fun for me because it's something new to learn. But, you know, boxing would obviously be my fallback if I needed something to do. But I'm getting pretty decent on the ground. So I think one of the things about me is I'm pretty well-rounded. I wouldn't say I'm fantastic in any one aspect, but I think the main thing about me is I can do a little bit of everything, which makes me dangerous in any situation. So
now how do you like grappling in the gi as compared to no gi?
I'm better in no gi. There's so many more things. But I think it's fun because it's kind of new. So you got a lot more tools to play with the gi. I avoided it for so long and kind of I was told by so many people that you're going to improve your no-gi by doing gi in the correct as my jiu-jitsu improved tremendously by working in the gi. It's a little more rougher on you because you get the scrapes on your face from the gi and stuff. But
It
improves your gi. So all it can do is make you better. So.
Sure. And I have a question for you that seems like, you know, we're seeing, like we've seen Saturday in the UFC, we've seen a fight ended by a spinning back kick. And it seems like, you know, this is mixed martial arts, but for years we had the basic four that I refer to them, boxing, Muay Thai, wrestling, and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. But now it seems like some of the traditional martial arts are kind of sneaking in the back door a bit and making a little more of a comeback. Do you see that trend also, and do you think it's going to continue?
Well, I think it goes through, the sport goes through different stuff, just like any sport. You had your sprawl and brawl, which was your Chuck Liddell, then you had your grapplers, and you had your ground and pound with Tito Ortiz. You look at your sports example is like basketball. When the Knicks were winning, they were doing a total defensive. Now at the Miami Heat, that's more of an offensive team. But now the Pacers are more defensive. So I think any sport can evolve and change with it. You know, when the guys get better at grappling and some strikers and come and start throwing kicks, and then that's going to become the thing. And somebody's going to figure out how to block that. And then they're going to change it into something else. An example, if you were looking at football, would be the pistol offense with the RG3 and those guys. This year, it was a big deal because nobody's seen it before. And now after a year of a summer of everybody looking at and figuring out a defense for it, it's going to get nullified this year and you're going to have to change your offense. So somebody's going to the kicks are going to become popular for a while and then somebody's going to figure that out and get out of it. Look at Krokop. He was real, real good for a while, and then he just, somebody figured out a way to nullify him, and then he stopped doing it.
Yeah, it's kind of my theory that's why we're seeing a little more of the traditional arts coming back, because everybody became so good with their Muay Thai. And just everyone knew what was coming, and, so all of a sudden, no one's really used to seeing a sidekick or any kind of spinning techniques, and so, right. Like you said, it just keeps evolving, and that's what makes it interesting.
Yeah, you always have somebody like Leon Machida, fantastic, head kicks and stuff like that. And he's got a different style. He's got the traditional karate style. But, I don't know what to tell you. It does change. You'll be watching it and, the guys that are going to be the best are going to be the guys that are well-rounded. You'll get somebody like a GSP, he studies everything. And to be a really good mixed martial artist, you can't just be one discipline, because somebody's going to be able to catch you in something else. If you've got really good stand-up and your ground game sucks, you're going to get exposed. If you've got really good ground game and your stand-up sucks, you're going to get exposed. So.
Right.
You mentioned the evolution of the sport there, because the other night I thought it was kind of funny. They used to have people boo all the time whenever a fight went to the ground. And the other night on UFC, of course, we had a big fight between Junior Dos Santos and Mark Hunt, and you know, they were basically toe-to-toe almost the whole fight, and then when there was a takedown, everybody started booing, and it made me sick of the old days. But it's becoming a striker's game again, I think, MMA. And
well, it's more exciting. So I think guys are gearing the game towards that. You're going to be more apt to get paid because it's going to be – it's a lot easier to get a knockout than a submission, I find. I mean, it you know, especially with – I mean, my guys, you know, ours we just got like a hard-nosed gym where we're kind of decent strikers, grounder and pounders, but I teach my guys a ton of defensive techniques more so for the submission. So we're not going to get tapped, and a lot of guys are ready. They know the defense before the offense. So you're more likely going to knock somebody out than submit them, I think, especially when you get more experienced guys in MMA. So your money goes up if you knock a guy out. So why not learn how to strike?
Yeah, and I noticed, you know, a lot of these fights, these guys seem to a lot of the MMA fighters today, even the best of the best, seem to have very limited boxing skills. There's very few fighters who, for instance, know to keep their hands up at all times. You know, just basic stuff sometimes that they just neglect. But you know, and just throwing a jab. Guys, a lot of guys don't throw a jab. They just throw heavy hands all the time.
Well, the higher level guys, I mean, your GSPs are going to jab, and your better guys are going to work on the basics, hands up and stuff. You know, Marcus Davis had a boxing career prior to, and he's got decent hands. There's different guys out there, and you could tell who's boxing who hasn't. I think a lot of them have picked up the Muay Thai, which has got a less, more of an offensive striking and more elbows and knees and everything else. And some hands, but, you know, Thai boxers generally don't have the greatest defense, but they got so many weapons coming at you that they don't have to worry about it.
Yeah. Yeah, another thing I'm always screaming for in MMA fights, and guys don't do enough, is the leg kick on the lead leg, you know, and they're just mm-hmm. getting around the cage all the time, and that leg is wide open. You know, it takes away so much from a guy when you can't lean on that lead leg to throw punches. It's going to be a stand-up fight, you know. I'd like to see these guys try to end those leg kicks more often.
Oh yeah, the leg kicks are definitely. You got, you know, guys like Yoshio Benua and guys like that are going to destroy your legs when you go against them. You know, so leg kicks are definitely a major part if they can get into it. And that's, you know, I'd rather see my guys kick the legs and do a flying kick to the head because you're going to get more bang for your buck there. And the likelihood of you connecting with a heavy kick is pretty low.
Right. Now, is this your first big opportunity here in any kind of MMA circles, or were you close to doing a professional MMA career at any point?
Well, MMA it's kind of weird, but I had been a wrestler, and that was what I was going to do. And then when I got into high school, into boxing, and wanted to do, you know, possibly go Olympic and possibly go pro. And I just never went there. And then, you know, I kind of was just doing it for fitness value. I wasn't really doing anything. I was teaching boxing, boxing fitness classes. And I started doing the jiu-jitsu just for fun and stuff. And the gentleman that was teaching jiu-jitsu at my studio, or at the jiu-jitsu studio, told me he was going to leave and asked me if I wanted to take the gym over. And I just kind of fell in my lap. So I started training MMA, started digging it, and I decided to ask Dan Severn if he wanted to fight me before he retired. And we had a couple fights scheduled, and then just for whatever reason, fell out. We ended up never fighting. We actually become good friends over the years, so I've done a bunch of seminars at my gym, and you know, he just retired, so obviously that fight's never going to happen. But, and then a couple of, I talked to Bob Sapp about possibly fighting, and a couple other people, and just for whatever reason, it's never come about. And this show came up, and one of my good friends and former sponsors called me up and he said, you got to try out for the show. And I did it kind of as a goof. And next thing you know, I was in the running for the show. I'm one of the top vote getters. And so I was like, what the hell? Let's do it. So.
Cool. And did you have any major role models growing up that helped you out along the way?
I got three older brothers, so I'd say them, my father. So hard work pays off. And all my brothers were state champion wrestlers. Two of my brothers are Golden Gloves champions. So, and I trained with them my whole life. So one of my brothers, Chris, was my coach, and he's now my my mental training coach. He does stuff with me over Skype. So I work with him pretty well. So got some good, a lot of good role models, I guess. For me and my family, I'd say, would be my biggest role models.
All right. And hello, favorite fighters. Any favorite fighters out there, boxing or MMA?
I like GSP because of the way he trains. He's real soft-spoken. Some of the guys that are cocky are kind of funny to watch, but I don't take them that seriously. Trying to think of some other guys, and I like Junior DeSantos. I think I like his striking. He's kind of neat. The heavyweights actually come into their own. A lot of the heavyweights, I like watching them. Frankie Edgar is a good boxer. He's a good boxer. You watch him box, he actually can box.
Right.
I pretty much anybody that can throw down. I don't like the Diaz brothers. I think they're idiots. They're bad for the sports. I mean, I think they're good. They're talented.
There goes your shot to compete in War MMA, the new league. Nick.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't think that's going to last anyway. I mean, smoking too much, I think, to run that. But
As
a boxing, I always say Ali is probably my favorite boxer to watch. He's just a phenomenal Sugarway Leonard, those type of guys that can move. At one time, I'm 250 now, but at one time I was, a little guy, so I used to like to move and jab and stick stuff.
Cool. Is anybody out there you want to give a shout out to, say hello to, or thank, or anything like that?
I guess thank all my training partners for helping me out at Shattuck MMA. My buddies at Kaizen MMA. A good friend of mine, Kamal Shelarus, is fighting Friday night on, I can't think of the organization. But he's going to be fighting in the Philippines, and he will be online. I'm trying to remember to think of where it is, but he has got a real good fight, and I think he's going to do well. Phil Baroni's in the same organization as him, so. But I'm going to give out my big shout out will be for Kamal Shelarus, the Prince of Persia, who used to be in the WEC and UFC, and good friends. So I think he's going to do well.
Yeah, I remember you hooked us up with him to do the show here, and he had a tough run in the UFC. I was rooting for him every fight, but he had some really tough, brutal fights.
Well, it's a tough draw. I mean, you come right in, and what his biggest issue is, Kamal is such a phenomenal grappler, and he gets in there and wants to strike, and his striking has improved tremendously over the years, but he's so much of a better grappler, and I hope he goes out and does what he's best at. I mean, he gets out there, and he does seminars here, and the stuff is just crazy. He's got some crazy good submissions and crazy good takedowns and stuff.
All right. Well, any final words, last thoughts here before we let you go?
If anybody is interested in sponsoring me, you can get a hold of me on Facebook. It's John Shattuck on Facebook, Shaddock. You can follow me on Twitter. That's Bones Shattuck on Twitter. I'm also on LinkedIn. I believe I'm Bone Shattuck. I'm not sure which one I am. And or you can email me at shattuckmma@comcast.net. So I'm always looking for sponsors. I've got some great sponsors right now. They're helping me IGY protein. I've got Muscle Sentry and SWAT are the three big ones right now, and I've got some other sponsors that have helped me out throughout the year. So.
All right, well, as always, we've enjoyed chatting with you here, and we'll keep in touch. Maybe we'll have you on again right before you get out there when you know a little bit more about the show. Kind of give us a little preview rundown of what you got coming up.
Cool. You guys going to post on my page then? Or?
Yeah, heck yeah. We'll put the link to this, and I just got to get into the show page here online and press it up and give a little bit of description of what we talked about, and then we'll blast it out too.
Sounds good.
Put it on the blog.
Yeah, because the guys from the show are gonna wanna listen to it. And actually, if you want to get in contact with Trey, I think I sent you his information. He's on my Facebook too, Trey Smith. If you want your information, because he's gonna give you some other guys to interview. Probably like Neil Grove, and a couple of the other guys will interview with you as well.
Neil, we've had on the show before, too, actually, believe it or not.
Who's that?
We've had Neil on the show at some point. I know we had him on at least a year ago, probably more than a year ago.
Cool. Yeah, he's badass. He's going to be a tough draw, but he's a good guy. It's funny, as we've gotten to know each other, me and the other guys from the show have gotten to know each other on Facebook and stuff. So there's some good guys that are going to be going down, so... It'll be a trip, man. It'll be good training. Get to train with Helson and Enzo Gracie, which would be amazing. In Hawaii, which isn't bad, so it should be fun.
Yeah, it sounds like they got the right thing going there. They got a lot of press they've been sending me. I've been posting all this stuff on my blog already before I even knew you were involved. So
cool.
Let me know you're part of it. We're definitely gonna be rooting for you.
Awesome, yeah. I'm going to be the launch out. I'm the old guy. So I'm used to the old guy to get out there and shock the world. And the beauty of it is I can hit, so I got to punch a shot. So if I'm behind on all cards, I can still throw the bomb.
Take some advice from Evander Holyfield. I was once on a conference call with him when he was talking about getting back into boxing way before he fought value up there. He said, age ain't nothing but a number.
Yeah, they talked about him possibly being a coach in the show, too. I don't know if that's going to happen or not, but he might be.
He needs the money.
Some boxing coaching.
I guess the kids
need to get
all the teenage child support payments.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, good luck, John.
All right, man. Thanks a lot.
No, all right, John.
I'll let the guys know.
All right. Thanks.
Good luck, man.
All right.
Hopping in.
All right. Thank you, man.
Yep. Take it easy.
All right. Bye.
Okay. So there we go. John Shattuck. Johnny Bones. Not Jones, but Shattuck. Shattuck. If anybody wants to Google him, find out a little more about him. He's been a friend of Fight News Unlimited from the early days, so we always like to help him out wherever we can. Get the word out on what he's doing. But speaking of getting the word out, we have a ton of news stories here to get to. As we were briefly talking about, Nick Diaz has a new MMA promotion, War MMA. And his very first event is coming up on June 22nd, or at least he's hoping it will be coming up. He hasn't got a promoter's license quite yet in California, but he's planning to have the show at the Stockton Arena in Stockton, California. And he's just basically lining up the fights already. The main event is apparently going to be former UFC welterweight Daniel Roberts against Justin Baseman in the main event there. And Roberts recently competed in his home state of Oklahoma, where he choked out former UFC and Bellator fighter Brian Foster in the first round. And he's also a teammate in Cesar Gracie Jiu-Jitsu with Diaz, along with his little brother Nate. And in addition to Roberts versus Baseman, the card will feature former UFC and WEC veteran Antonio Banuelos versus Benny Benson, Caleb Mitchell versus Evan Esguerra, Roy Broughton versus Laron Wilson, and Mike Persons versus Clayton McKinney. Also, Darren Cooley versus Cody Gibson. And those are just the card fights that we know of right now. There would probably be more added. Another little difference, I guess, is big, as fights are going to be in a ring instead of a cage. They will be competed under MMA's unifying rules with one additional stipulation. No elbows are allowed to the head of a grounded opponent, which is, I'm sure, a rule that KJ Noon's wishes was still in effect before his last UFC fight, which we'll get to a little later. But the only roadblock, as I said, is the promoter's license. Tuesday, California State Athletic Commission Executive Director Andy Foster said that War MMA had not been approved for a promoter's license because they had not submitted all the necessary information required for review. But once they receive that information, the approval process is fairly simple. So, probably just, nothing but a technicality there. And a former guest of ours, Misha Tate, has her dream come true here with, unfortunately, an injury to Kat Zingano. I haven't heard much about what that injury is, but apparently she is going to get her shot at Ronda Rousey, second shot, and she's going to appear on The Ultimate Fighter, which is starting filming this month, I believe.
Yeah, I believe Kat has to have surgery, and I think it was a leg injury, and she'll be out for approximately 9 months. So, feel bad. I feel bad for her, but you got to be happy for Cupcake.
Yeah, how do you like that Tito Ortiz, Tony? David Ortiz.
What about Tito Ortiz? you must be talking about Big Crappy.
Yeah. That was a moonshot.
I just saw it.
47 is my lucky number, too, and that's who you guys got pitching for you.
I was more concerned about tomorrow night. I was 1-0, I'm now 1-5.
I'll get back to this UFC story here. I guess Zingano injured her right knee. It was kept secret since May 16th. But now that they've revealed it, I guess they've got to make a move. But Ronda Rousey is actually thrilled about this because she said, "This is what we really wanted all along. Everyone said an Ultimate Fighter between me and Misha would be the best. We have a personal history with each other, and this is a personal show. For some reason, me and Misha are intertwined in fate like Ali and Frazier or something like that." I think people will look back at this as one of the monumental rivalries and look back at this as one of those things that really cemented women's MMA. But actually, Rousey was unaware of the change until the last minute as well. Tate actually appeared on the set saying that her rival had become visibly angry upon seeing her show up for filming at the gym. I guess so. It must have already started filming. I thought it wasn't going to start until next month, but apparently it's already started. Tate said, "It was rewarding to see that. I was like, yay, this is getting good. I watched her go to her corner, and her corner was up in arms. I was just sitting there in the doorway thinking, this is awesome. I felt I was cheated a little in that fight with Kat. I had two solid rounds and one not-so-good round. Either way, I felt I was meant to be here, and it's come full circle." And it's a pretty unusual move, but I guess you got to do what you got to do there. And I'm sure that Zingano will get another shot once he heals from her injury and gets a go-ahead. It's pretty interesting dynamic here. And, of course, we have our own history with Misha. Had her on the show, so we'll definitely have to revisit that and try to get her on again, maybe before the season airs. get her take on how it went.
That show has the potential to be a three-ring circus with the male and female fighters. I just wonder how that dynamic's gonna go.
Well, Tom, you just gave me the perfect segue talking about a three-ring circus, because there is a story here I want to talk about, very next story here on the list, where a undercard bout is getting more attention than the main event on a Joseph Parker versus Francois Botha boxing match in Auckland on June 13th. You've heard of midget wrestling. Well, now apparently we're going to have midget boxing. I don't like that term. They might be called little people or dwarfs. But this article calls them dwarfs. Two dwarfs will step in the ring for a televised boxing bout next month, and they're set for a pretty big payday, apparently. One of the guys actually has never boxed before, but Matthew Wood is an early childhood teacher, and Colin Lane is a night shift worker at Sky City, whatever that is, I don't know. But they're going to be fighting each other June 13th, and they're each going to be receiving between $5,000 and $8,000 for about 6 weeks worth of training and their three-round fight. And all their training and other expenses are covered as part of the deal, believe it or not. And it's one of those things where it's being talked about, and it's actually a pretty big payday comparatively in New Zealand boxing circles anyway, where top-end professional boxers make close to $5,000 for one fight. And these two guys have actually known each other for 14 years. And
what was the sports guy's name again?
Lane. That's his name. Oh, Matthew Wood and Colin Lane.
It's funny because I had a roommate in my senior year of college, and his name is Matt Wood, and he was literally more obsessed with midgets than I am. I'm literally about to email him right now.
Well, I guess apparently, according to one of these guys, on one particular morning, he was at a bar, and the promoter asked him if he was interested in boxing. And here he is today getting ready for this big fight. But he's convinced, he wants to prove something for little people. He says, I want to get out there and prove to the world that little people can do anything. All my workmates were really shocked when it came out in the papers. They are all looking for it. And he said he's known Wood for 14 years. The pitting two dwarfs against each other has sparked some criticism, but the promoter Higgins defended the fight, saying it was not a gimmick. This is absolutely a serious fight, he said. Both blokes will give it 100%, train properly, and take it seriously. I promise New Zealanders this is exactly what is happening. These guys are training around the clock and both want to win. And he says the real farce happened when Sonny Bill Williams, where the result was allegedly tampered with. These two men are going to show Sonny Bill Williams how it's done. And we just talked about War MMA, Stockton, California, and the Diaz brothers. Well, believe it or not, a huge fan of the UFC turned away a carjacker, or at least held him down until police got there, with skills that he learned from simply watching a UFC fight. Of course, UFC 160 was just on, and had a couple pretty big main events there. This guy had actually just gotten back from a bar where he was watching it, or I don't know if it was a bar. It must have been somebody's house because he had his kids with him. But he said his family was pulling up to their home in Stockton, and they just returned from watching this fight, and they're in the driveway when someone came up and started pounding on the back window of their SUV. Then the man tried opening the back door, where this guy, Simmons, Abel Simmons, no pun intended, that's his real name, Abel, where his son and his newborn, or his son's a newborn and a two-year-old, were sleeping. Fortunately, the door was locked. Simmons jumped out, tried to stop the man, and his wife called 911. So the Electric Carjacker got one punch off against Simmons, and that's when things got real. He changed levels, wrapped his arms around the assailant's legs, and took him to the ground. Simmons first went for an armbar, and guy got out of that. Then he went for a rear naked choke. Guy turned out of that, but then ended up in the headlock position. So, of course, what's next? The guillotine choke. And he kept him in the guillotine choke, and actually, I seen the video on this, and they've interviewed the guy the next day, and he actually demonstrated on his neighbor. He has his neighbor down in the kitchen. Everything. And the neighbor verified it. He said, I came out, he's got this guy all wrapped up in a choke, and that was it. So he did a pretty good job getting the guy out of commission there. And then, of course, he had to say something, too, before the guy left. He said, looks like you'll be going to jail tonight. There you go. Talk about reality shows. I need to get this guy on the next Ultimate Fighter, I guess. Another quick MMA story. Holly Holm, who just retired from boxing, has a new four-fight contract with a Texas promotional firm called Legacy Fighting Championship. And she's scheduled to make her debut July 19th in Houston. And her promoter said the agreement is going to provide her the experience and exposure she needs to get to the top of MMA in as brief a time as possible. She's 31 years old, had an 11-year boxing career, and now she's focusing exclusively on MMA. And she's actually already had three cage fights where she's undefeated, 3-0. And long-term goal, apparently, is what I predicted it would be, a fight with UFC Women's Bantamweight Champion Ronda Rousey. But it's not going to happen within the time she's with LFC, obviously, because they don't do cross-promotion there. They don't allow you to, UFC doesn't allow you to fight for any other promotion while you're fighting. They did with some of the Strikeforce contracts, but now that Strikeforce is all done, I don't think they allow that. So we'll see what happens there. But, I'm excited to see how she does, because I think she would represent the biggest threat to Ronda Rousey out there, considering her boxing experience. But she's got a lot of work to do to get up there in par with the jiu-jitsu and grappling part of it. That story I found the other day about Tim Sylvia. He's back on track. 37 years old. He's going to be fighting May 31st on the 1FC card tomorrow night. But he's had a 12-year career and obviously had some ups and downs. Headlining UFC fights. And I actually saw him out in Worcester, Massachusetts, fighting the world's strongest man, or former world's strongest man, Marius Pulchinowski. It's actually one of my top-rated YouTube videos. So if you want to see that, check that out. It's out there.
I believe he won that by armbar, didn't he?
I don't think so. I think it was a submission or a decision, if I remember correctly.
Oh, okay.
No, it was I think it was a knockout, actually.
Ah.
But it definitely wasn't an armbar.
Hmm. Yeah, because that's, you know, there's always that question with someone, well, the world's strongest man, you know, and will the leverage of jiu-jitsu, you know, how would that match up? I think the guy just powered his way out of it, and always that interesting question there.
Well, I think it was only Pudzianowski's second fight in MMA, even though he had some martial arts experience prior to the whole thing. But what happened was he just turned completely beet red after a few minutes of trying to take Tim down. And, you know, Tim Sylvia is a big dude. It's pretty hard to pick that guy up. And, you know, when he's obviously trying to, you know, use evasive maneuvers, it's going to be even harder. So he just hit a wall. And nothing they could do, and just as his muscles just died on him, and Sylvia just waded in and took him apart. Sylvia says the biggest difference for him now is that he's no longer the best guy in the gym. I when I was training in Iowa for 5 years, I knew I was the best guy there, so it was hard for me to push myself. Now I'm surrounded by 10 legitimate heavyweights, and I get beaten up a lot. I love it. I feel that this is the rebirth of Tim Sylvia, the rebirth of the maniac.
Where is he training now, Rich? Where is he training?
In the Philippines.
Ah.
Now, this is his second stint in Manila. His first fight was declared a no contest as his nemesis, Andrei Arlovsky, connected with illegal soccer kicks. And he says, I love fighting in the Philippines. The people are respectful, very respectful and very knowledgeable. He says, MMA is an individual sport, but you need to surround yourself with a good team, guys who will always have your best interest in mind, and guys who will always protect you. There you have it. Now, I'm going to talk about UFC 160 here. I also wanted to go through the payouts at the same time here. I got all those in front of me as far as who made what. But we'll start right off the top, the main event. Cain Velasquez versus Antonio Bigfoot Silva. It was kind of a funny fight to me in some respects because before the fight even happened, we know what happened in the last fight. Silva got his head busted open, he bled everywhere. It almost made me wonder whether they were using the same mat from that fight because when the preliminary started, I noticed there's blood all over the mat already. Big puddles of blood, not just spots, but there was a huge pile of blood, you know, a couple spots of blood right next to the cage. And I was wondering, as Antonio Silva came into the ring, if he was maybe a bit traumatized by that. without it, but it came to mind. I mean, if I was in that type of fight with blood that bad and I come in the cage and there's blood everywhere, it would probably be a psychological thing, I would think, that might have affected him. But either way, Cain Velasquez took him out even quicker this time. I don't know whether it was a fair stoppage or not. I mean, Silva's got a pretty big head to, you know, knock him out. I don't know. It didn't seem like he was woozy at all. But, you know, you have to err on the side of caution in these MMA fights sometimes, and I think Velasquez probably would have knocked him out if he kept punching him in that position.
Yeah, I would agree exactly. I think it was maybe a bit premature, but I don't think it would have mattered in the overall scheme of things.
And Silva started right off the bat, very cautious. He did seem a little bit gun shy from their last encounter, and if he was going to win this fight, he would have had to have been way more aggressive to start and just didn't do that. It seemed like he was, trying to basically wait it out and make Cain make a huge mistake and capitalize on it, but that never happened. Anyway, Silva got paid $75,000 for his couple minutes there in the cage. Cain Velasquez made $400,000, which is pretty comparable to what Brock Lesnar used to make when he was in UFC and was the champion there for a little while. So that's good for the big guys. Good money there. I'm sure he gets a healthy bonus for a locker room bonus, they call him. I'm sure they probably gave him some kind of extra on top of that, too. Junior Dos Santos versus Mark Hunt next. Dos Santos, of course, made a lot of waves with the way he finished the fight, but he didn't really appear too much different from when he fought Cain Velasquez as far as his style and his technique and other than the last one of the fight. He just seemed to be very cautious himself with Mark Hunt and said after the fight, Mark Hunt is a very dangerous man. I guess that's why he was a little bit leery of, you know, going toe-to-toe with him too much. Hunt connected with a few punches here and there. I mean, he just didn't seem to be using that looping hook type of punch that was instrumental in knocking down the skyscraper there, Stefan Struve, when he broke his jaw. He didn't seem to have that range anymore in this fight. He just got frustrated by Dos Santos circling around the cage and hitting him with pot shots, and Dos Santos used the jab a lot. Just pretty much doubled his significant strikes, or at least strikes landed, I think, was double almost through every round. So he got it done that way, and then he hit him with a wheel kick, I guess is what they were calling it. Came around, hit him at the heel. It looked like it was a glancing shot, and that wasn't even the thing that really caused the TKO, I don't think. It was when he followed up with punches after Hunt hit the ground. But when they showed the replay, it looked like his calf hit him in the forehead, and it just sent Hunt off balance back to the mat. I don't know whether there was some kind of knockout, any kind of disorientation, or at least from that. But once he hit the mat, and then Dos Santos jumped on him and threw another right hand to his head, bounced off the mat. That was it. He was crawled out and tried to stand up and crashed his face into the cage to add some insult to injury there. And Hunt actually made $160,000, so over twice what Silva made in the main event. And Dos Santos ended up getting $120,000 for the win and $120,000 in salary. So $240,000 for that one. It's a pretty big deal there. They're talking, obviously, now about a trilogy, Junior Dos Santos versus Cain Velasquez 3. And I'm not too enthused by that. I really don't think it's going to make that much of a difference. I don't think, unless Dos Santos does something radically different with his game plan, I think it's going to pretty much go the same way for Dos Santos as it did for Silva in this rematch.
Yeah, I think the only way to hype it would have to be the issue of Junior's health or lack thereof. From the training mistakes and apparently his body. You know, we went through that last week. I don't need to repeat it, but I can see that the hype machine is going to have to do that. But I would maybe like to see both of them fight someone else before we get this trilogy on. But apparently what Dana said, it's a no-brainer, so I guess that's next.
Right. And a guy I'd love to see fight for a title at some point, probably within his next 3 or 4 fights, I think it's going to happen. Glover Teixeira had a big win over James Tahuna. I believe it was a guillotine choke that ended it. But just looked great all around. He's definitely overmatched for Tahuna. Didn't seem like it was a very competitive fight. But now he's asking for the winner of the fight between Rashad Evans and Dan Henderson, I think.
Right.
So we'll see. That's a good test for him to see if he's title worthy. But he's on a 19 fight win streak, actually. So.
Yeah, and I would have to think if he can defeat the winner. And then Jones successfully defeats Gustafsson. Well, why not? I mean, if you can think of a better match at 205, please share it. So.
All right. Well, Glover made $48,000 for his win. That's $24,000 bonus for the win and $24,000 salary. James Tahuna walked away with $30,000 for the loss there. Then what turned out to be the knockout of the night, T.J. Grant versus Gray Maynard. It was a good fight. This one's probably the closest salary between winner and loser. We had T.J., obviously not the biggest name in this matchup, but he made $50,000, which was $25,000 salary, $25,000 win bonus. And they don't include, obviously, the knockout of the night bonus, which I think is $65,000 these days. Gray Maynard made $45,000 base pay only. And this was actually, I'm not sure if it was confirmed or not, but a lot of reporters put it out there that Mike Tyson was the one who actually picked this as the knockout of the night because Dana White and the Petitas wanted to give it to Junior Dos Santos. that. They turned around and they gave it to TJ Grant, apparently because Mike Tyson said they should. And he was cage side, right, sitting right next to Dana White. And actually, I think Teixeira jumped out of the ring just to shake his hand, jumped out of the cage before they even.
Yeah, wasn't there an article? I think someone said something about how Mike Tyson is Justin Bieber to men. You know, how the teenage girls swoon over Justin Bieber so much, and I kind of thought that was a weird analogy, but, and as far as the Grant-Maynard fight, the company that I write for, Drink Real Water, sponsors Gray Maynard, and needless to say, I had a little bit of emotion in that, but if we ever have the privilege of getting T.J. Grant on the show, I'll be the first to congratulate him. I mean, he did what he had to do, and I think that Maynard, again, you give me your opinion on this, but I think he's really got away from his wrestling roots, and I think he'd have been well served. Of course, I mean, he may have been rocked so much he couldn't have got the fight to the ground, but I just don't think he was thinking in those terms. Did you get that impression?
Well, he was doing well with the striking, actually, to start the fight. Actually, that was one of the fights on the card that I missed the ending of, but I saw the beginning, so I ended up only seeing it when they started showing the replay.
Mm-hmm.
But TJ kind of got hit by a few shots, and he looked like he was pretty hurt, but he sort of shook it off and was able to, you know, get through it. And then I think that, more than anything, the fact that he walked through a lot of those hard punches discouraged Maynard, and but he wanted to make sure that I think he was able to throw something on top of that that did hurt him, and then he ended up just getting too overconfident and got caught.
Yeah, because I'll be back out in Las Vegas the first week of July, and I may be seeing him out there. And, it's going to be a tough road back for him, because I don't know if he was looking beyond TJ or if he, you know, the old saying, he just got caught. So I don't know. It's going to be. It's going to have to go back to the drawing board.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. I think that he's got a lot going for him. Obviously, he's getting paid for his name and his skills. He's been around a while. He's not going to fade away anytime soon. He's not going to be one of those guys where if he loses a couple fights in a row, they're going to throw him out. So I think he's got a bit of a leeway there with the organization to get his game together and start improving again. So we'll see. But TJ is just one of those guys that is on the rise. His star is on the rise, and he's turning a lot of heads. I don't know if he's really that good as what they're saying he is, but he's already calling for a shot at the champ there at the weight. So he thinks
I think that's pretty much in the making now. And based on what I've seen, he's a live body. I mean, I wouldn't call him the favorite per se, but I definitely think he's right in that fight all the way.
All right. Then we had Donald the Cowboy Cerrone made $82,000, 41 salary, 41 win bonus. To pummel KJ Nunes, who only made $41,000 base salary there on that fight. And talk about a beating. Man, he hit KJ Nunes with so many elbows, he split his own elbow open. And had a pretty nasty cut. I saw some pictures of it after the fact. And KJ Nunes is definitely slipping. His value is definitely slipping. That was one of those fights where you almost expected him to get cut right afterwards, but I think they're going to give him another shot to see if he can compete there in the UFC. But I was really surprised when they matched him up with Randy Couture's son, Ryan. And it was kind of a controversial decision, but Ryan ended up beating him in, I think, the last Strikeforce fight before he got offered the contract with the UFC. And then they picked up Nunes' contract as well, I think, due to that controversy. They wanted to see what he could do against some UFC guys before they move forward. So we'll see if he comes back. But, Cerrone hit him from all kinds of angles. He was got a couple takedowns here and there and just totally dominated this fight. And I think, his work with the Jackson camp is definitely showing some major improvements in his game. And definitely he's going to be in a title picture one of these days if he keeps it up. So we'll see if he gets another a little bit more talent, I think, than KJ Nunes he needs. But Nunes was cut up so bad they kept asking if he could see and if he wanted to continue. Got to give him credit. He's definitely not hearing any of that. He's, no, I'm going to go back out there. And he did. And, turned in a, you know, pretty tough fight there to go the distance in. But he did. And I think we'll see him again. And we had Mike Pyle versus Rick Story. Mike Pyle got $84,000, $42,000 salary, $42,000 win bonus. And Rick Story got $27,000. I don't have the result in front of me here, but I think this was a decision, wasn't it?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. So, I don't remember a whole lot about that fight. I think this was one of those... Oh, yeah, this was the one where I thought Story won the first two rounds and then lost the third. And this was, like, two back-to-back weird decisions for me as far as, you know, who won the fight. Pyle got the win, but I thought Rick Story did enough in the first two rounds to get it, and then he just didn't have enough left in the third round to compete, but he lasted the whole fight, and he should have got the win, and they gave it to Pyle. And then Dennis Bermudez versus Max Holloway, same thing happened. Holloway wailed away in the first couple rounds and seemed to have everything under control, and Bermudez got the win because he had a better third round. I know that they don't do the 10-8 rounds too often in MMA. And these are, I think, were all 29-28 split decisions. So I obviously didn't score any round 10-8. So I wonder, how would they arrive at those decisions? And what kind of fight were they watching? Because I couldn't see any room for them to say Holloway didn't win any of those first two rounds. Obviously, he didn't win the third round. He gets elbowed up pretty good at the end of it and had a big lump on his head at the end of the fight. But I don't know. Sometimes I wonder what kind of fight these guys are watching.
Yeah.
Did you think the same thing, Tom?
Exactly. So it's, you know, sometimes you just got to scratch your head and remember that old saying that they have plastered on the wall at the training center for the Ultimate Fighter show. Don't leave it in the hands of the judges.
All right.
Easier said than done, of
course. And Pyle got $84,000 for his troubles. Rick Story got $27,000. Bermudez got $28,000, 14 salary, 14 win. Holloway got $14,000. We had Robert Whittaker versus Colton Smith. Both guys had come off Ultimate Fighter shows. I think Whittaker was on the Australian version of the show called The Smashes. And talk about technical boxing style. Whittaker just totally out-punched Smith. I was actually kind of impressed with how who was it? One of the fights, I think it was... Teixeira's fight, where, you know, there was a lot of clinching going on. And I was just watching, thinking about, actually, no, it was, I think it was a fight before that. Nurmagomedov, his fight. He fought a lot like Colton Smith in his last few fights.
Right.
With his wrestling and grappling. And then Colton Smith came up, and it was the next fight, and you saw none of that. Like, he totally abandoned that part of his game, which made him so good. And he actually tried to go toe-to-toe and strike with Whittaker, who is a much better technical striker. And he paid for it. He got cut up and beaten up over the course of a couple rounds, and finally it was the TKO that ended it. And it was just unbelievable. And he abandoned his best skills to try to go and... you know, beat the guy at his home game. But Whitaker made $30,000, 15 salary, 15 win. And Smith made $15,000 even for the losing effort there, but he'll be back. Khabib Nurmagomedov made $28,000 for his win over Abel Trujillo, made $8,000. Nurmagomedov, 14,000 salary, 14,000 win. That was a pretty good fight. Nurmagomedov is still undefeated now, of course, and he showed he's definitely got some skill there, and he should be moving up the chain with that performance. See what happens next for him. And we'll just go quickly through the rest of these guys. Stephen Thompson beat Nashawn Burrell. Thompson got 16,000, 8 salary, 8 win. Nashawn Burrell got 9,000, that is. George Roop beat Brian Bowles in an impressive comeback knockout. He won $26,000, 13,000 for salary, 13,000 for win. Bowles got $19,000 for that one. And then Jeremy Stevens got 48 grand, 24 salary, 24 win for his victory over Esteban Payan. And another interesting story here. The UFC is not only global, but it's reached the highest point on the globe now, Mount Everest. Speaking of Payan, another Payan, Ruben Payan. He's a fitness consultant and the co-founder of the Institute of Human Performance China. Recently took a trip up to Mount Everest and got to the peak, where he planted a UFC flag at the 29,029 foot mark. Peak there, and so UFC has made it to the top in more ways than one. And as we talked about Mike Tyson, you read the same article that I did. It's a big influence here at this UFC 160 card, and you actually went into the octagon to raise one of the arms of light heavyweight Glover Teixeira after he beat Tuna, and as I said, he cast a veto on who should receive the $50,000 for knockout. I think it's $65,000, but they're saying $50,000. That used to be what it was. He's obviously fought before at MGM Grand, and he lives in Vegas, so makes perfect sense for him to be at this, since he's also an MMA fan now. But actually, it was Dana White, and he said he's the Justin Bieber for grown men that like fighting. He said he makes everything crazy. It's fun to watch fights with. He's fun to hang around with. I like having him around, said White. And I know we didn't talk about talked a little bit last week about John Cholish, who just left the UFC and complained about some money issues. I don't know if I have this story here, but White came out and called him not too bright for saying all this stuff, and just he made it basically sound like all the guy was complaining about was taxes, and saying, of course, you got to pay taxes, this, that, and the other thing. But I think he really shot himself in the foot there, because, you know, it could have come up with a better point. But basically all he mentioned as far as actually confronting the pay issue was to say that it's been beaten to death, the whole issue. Mm-hmm. But you'd think there's a reason why it's been beaten to death, and he didn't really go into any clarity on that. But it's another interesting story that came out this week. And there's a new hashtag out there on Twitter, hashtag pay the fighters. from what he's been doing, Cholish. So we'll see what happens with that. Forrest Griffin, obviously, is big in the news this week, too. He announced his retirement from MMA, effective immediately. And he made the announcement at Saturday night's UFC 160 post-fight press conference out there in Vegas. Dana White announced that Griffin will continue working for the company for as long as he lives. And actually, he joked that hopefully he'll do more work than Chuck Liddell, who was also sitting with Dana White and Mike Tyson at the fight the other day. course, Griffin is known for being in a couple of historic wars against Stephen Bonner, including the one fight that has actually been declared the number one UFC fight of all time in the UFC Ultimate 100 Greatest Fights program. And it's actually their finale fight from The Ultimate Fighter. So it's a pretty big deal for him to walk away at this point. But he said, when Dana White says retire, you should retire. Otherwise, you will blow your knee out for your next fight. and two of his last three fights, he's pulled out due to injury. How many fights can you go through? Cancellations. So he's apparently all done. We're good. So Dana says he will have some role, some title, and hopefully he will work more than Chuck Liddell. He will be here and will stay with this company at least for the rest of my life. And it's likely that Griffin will take up charity work with the UFC, which ties in with the current work he does, donating his time to local efforts there. Apparently he donates his time to a local school to help feed the kids who normally can't afford to eat. He's 33 years old, and he says, I saw the Brian Stan versus Wanderlei Silva fight, and I thought, if I don't have another one of those in me, then I shouldn't be doing this anymore. If you can't put in a product like that, and then if you can't put on a product like that, then don't put that product out there at all. That has been my dream. This has been my dream since 2000. It's all I've wanted to do. There it is. And before we forget, we got to go over this. The bonuses, in addition to Knockout of the Night, which we talked about for the UFC, Submission of the Night went to Glover Teixeira for the guillotine choke over James Tahuna. Fight of the Night went to Junior Dos Santos versus Mark Hunt. And interestingly enough, wanted to mention the stats for the Donald Cerrone fight. He landed 102 significant strikes. Total strikes landed was 140. Head strikes landed was 95. And he had 31 body strikes and 14 leg strikes on top of that.
I wonder how KJ felt the next morning.
Yes. Probably had a lot of stitches.
Yeah.
And here's another story. The International Mixed Martial Arts Federation Friday announced that the first World Championships in Amateur MMA will be in early July 2014 in Las Vegas, during the Las Vegas Fight Week in conjunction with the UFC Fan Expo. And that should be a good type of Golden Gloves type of event there for these young MMA guys and the amateurs. We'll see how that goes. Fight Week has become an annual event that encompasses several different functions spanning the week, leading up to a major UFC event that takes place around the 4th of July holiday. There are exhibitions, training sessions, special events, and competitions, the UFC Fan Expo, and more. And now the IMMAF World Championships will be added to that schedule. And they're open to national teams consisting of amateur athletes representing a national federation affiliated to the IMMAF. There's our 90-second warning. So I think that's actually the last story I had. I had another one on the dwarfs boxing each other from earlier in the week, but I guess I covered that. Talking about their payment. So we've done a lot of MMA here. Do we got any big boxing matches we got to watch out for this weekend, Tony, before we go?
Well, the most important thing is we've got Alvarez and Mayweather. It looks like for September 14th.
Canelo Alvarez and Mayweather got signed?
It looks like it's almost a done deal.
All right. That's interesting.
That's the big boxing news of the week.
I heard that Mayweather was trying to make it a weight issue. Ducking him. how they're
going to
do it.
Well, I don't think so. I think Mayweather handles him pretty convincingly. Alvarez is too easy to hit. He's very aggressive. He's very strong. He hits hard. But he's too easy to hit. I think style-wise, Austin Trout would be a bit more difficult fight for Mayweather. He's a tall, lanky southpaw with quick hands and good defense. I think he would be more of a style-wise problem for Mayweather than Alvarez will be.
Right. Well, I don't know what the MMA schedule is for this weekend. You know, there's another free fight coming up. We'll talk about that next week. I don't think it's anything big this weekend. We'll get to that next week, and we're gonna have gonna work out something with some guests that Tom suggested. Terry Daniels. Tom said he's gonna have him on the show next week, right?
Right. He's all set and ready to go.
All right. So we're going to get him on, and then your real water buddies out there in Vegas, we're going to get one of those guys on. And it's kind of interesting that you're connected to those guys, because you've got one of those machines that does the water ionization. And I always thought that it was too hard to do, to bottle it, but apparently they figured out the process. And that was a big niche to get into.
And apparently, I just found out that Freddie Roach is on board with the company, and during the last HBO fight, which I didn't see, but supposedly real water was visible in the corner. So I'll be writing a promotion on that too. That, hey, conditioning's where it's at in this game, and the real water's been helping. So a lot of good things.
Yeah, it's definitely good for you. I drink coffee made with ionized water every morning, so I believe it. All right, well, I guess that's it, unless you guys got anything else to add.
I don't.
All right.
Well,
all right, guys.
I'll send you that info via email.
Right. So I'll be following up with that, and we'll look forward to it in a couple of weeks. Rich,
yeah,
I hope you haven't forgot about it.
I have two friends on the card. I got to do, once we get up the line tonight, I got to finish this one online assessment, so I'm not going to have a lot of time tonight, but I will email you tomorrow before I go to the game.
Right, exactly. And just let us know what to do. We'll go from there. All right?
Sounds good.
All right.
Okay, guys, let's have a great weekend and enjoy whatever fights we can find. All right.
All right.
Good night.
Baby.
All right.